Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine, and I have here on the line...
Alan Nixon.
Terry DeKester will be joining us in the last part of the show or so. So we await him, and we can talk about him behind his back, of course, until he gets here.
No doubt, of course.
Which is something that we would normally do anyway. Meanwhile, the city of Washington is prepared for a government shutdown. In fact, the District of Columbia has said that it has found an emergency fund to keep spending its money. And when the District of Columbia government is more functional than the federal government, you know we've got a problem.
Yeah. And I think we've got to keep our eyes on the people, or let me put it like this. I think we should focus on the particular part of the government, federal government, that is dysfunctional. In itself, the federal government isn't dysfunctional. However, we have one party who is now has fallen into a group of warring factions, and they're gumming up the whole mess. You know, it's kind of like a car that has four tires and one of them is flat. The other three tires are fine. I think the Republican Party, they're the flat tire in the bunch.
Well, they are the flat tire in the bunch. I predicted back in 2010 when the Republicans took over the House, there was going to be gridlock until they were gone, and gridlock there is. And what's interesting about this gridlock is it's absolutely purposeful. This is not a case of two parties coming together, getting close to a deal, not quite making a deal. This is a case of one party saying, we just want to continue the government spending as it is, even with a sequester, which we hate. That would be the Democratic Party, which actually, remember, the sequester is something Republicans liked. The spending under President Obama has dipped farther and faster than under any president in American history. But that's not good enough for them. It's not even about spending. It's about Republicans wanting to make sure that middle-class and poor Americans pay through the nose for their health care. And what's interesting to me about all this is, you know, I could say cynically that it's about the fact that hospitals and health insurance companies and medical manufacturers donate billions of dollars to Republicans. And, you know, I'm sure that that's true. But I actually think it's more than that. This is, of course, a Republican plan, Obamacare. It was set up by Mitt Romney in Massachusetts, where it's working quite well. It's better than the current health system, but not near as far as we liberals would like. We'd like to see universal care for all. It's a moderate, shall we say, conservative plan. I would dare say, Garland, that if this were not called Obamacare, and of course the Republicans labeled it that specifically to personalize it, but it were called Bush Care or Romney Care or anything like that, there wouldn't be this kind of backlash to it.
I agree. And here's the thing to keep in mind. Some of the states where GOP governors are refusing to expand Medicaid, which is part of the Obamacare, the ACA, there's pushback from the medical industry, from the hospitals. The fact of the matter is this: the hospitals and the clinics and are going to make more money. The medical industry is going to make a lot of money out of this. So, whereas they kind of played the role of being against it, when it comes down to it, they are pushing GOP governors to accept the expanded Medicaid because it will make them more money. So, I think we do have to continue to reiterate. The Republican Party is a dysfunctional group. I don't even know if we can call it a party anymore. To be honest, in the standard sense of American politics, what has been the normal context of American politics over, say, the last century, I don't think you can call the Republican Party a party as we understood it anymore. As I said, it's a group of warring political factions. The fact is, mainstream of the Republican Party wants to strike a deal, wants to come up with something, and would, in all likelihood, would do away with the sequester because many of them have said it's a good idea. However, because they gerrymandered the districts, they empowered the far-right authoritarian crazies, and now they can't control them.
Well, here's first of all, let me give out the number and encourage anyone who wants to call in to do so at 202-889-9797. We always welcome your calls, and we are live here. We do not know at this moment whether the government will shut down, but Garland, I predict it will. I predict that it has to. I predict that unless and until the government shuts down, only then will Wall Street and other interests that control the Republican Party, even more than the Tea Party interests, be able to prevail upon them to not, well, self-destruct. But what's fascinating to me about all this is that to get a bill passed in Congress to continue to fund the government at current levels, again, nothing dramatic, no big changes, nothing that President Obama is pushing through. Frankly, the budget is one that Democrats think is too small because, like I say, it includes that silly sequester. But just to do that, what you normally need, of course, is a majority in the House, a majority in the Senate, and signed into law by the president. The president's ready to sign into law. The Senate has a majority. And here's what's so fascinating. The House has a majority, too. If this continuing resolution were put to a vote, the 190-odd Democrats could combine with, it would only take maybe 20, 30 Republicans, and that would include, by the way, Speaker Boehner, who believe that it's better to just continue forming the government than to shut it down, to cause veterans not to be paid, to cause national parks to be closed, to cause government offices to be shut down all across the country. Certainly 10% of the Republicans believe that. I would argue maybe even 30 to 40% of the Republicans in the House believe that. They can combine with 100% of the Democrats and easily, easily pass this bill. The only reason it's not being passed is because the Speaker of the House has the authority to say, you know what, I'm not going to even put a vote that'll get a majority of the House to the floor. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do what the majority of Republicans say, not what the majority of the House of Representatives say, certainly not what the majority of Americans think. I'm going to appeal to the majority only of Republicans in the House, because after all, they're the people who choose me to be Speaker. So in order to save his own seat, he's willing to sacrifice, well, the country.
Yeah, and I think a lot of this goes back to gerrymandered districts, because they have made the districts so red that the more extreme Republicans, the more extreme voters control these districts at the polls. So I would think, Mark, probably really outside of the Tea Party caucus, which is conservatively less than 50% of the House Republicans, the rest of them would vote for it. What you see is a lot of Republicans who behind the scenes, and some of them even in front of the scenes, say, I don't want to shut down. However, I got to go back to my district. And not only that, if I vote with the Democrats, or if I don't favor this madness that the Heritage Foundation and Freedom Works and all these other far right wing nutcase organizations are going to flood money into my district to support some kook who's going to beat me in the primaries. So right. They're either a Tea Party member by choice, or they're frightened into being a Tea Party supporter by the threat of losing their seat.
Right. And given the fact that these primaries are sometimes the only competitive elections in these districts, which are so well gerrymandered. It would take 55-60% of the people voting for the Democrats in order to take the House back. Let's all remember, because people don't say this often enough, a majority of Americans in 2012 voted for Democrats in the House of Representatives. A minority of Americans voted for Republicans. But when you add up the votes, a majority doesn't rule in this supposed democracy, constitutional republic of ours, because if you draw the district lines, you can count some votes more than others, and that's why Republicans are in power at all. But the gerrymandered lines, what they do, of course, is it means that Republicans aren't fighting with Democrats for votes. They're fighting with other Republicans for votes. And, of course, they're seeing who can be the most radical out there. Here's what I find, though, so fascinating about this, is I want to see where this debate is 3-4 months from now. And the reason is this. Coming Tuesday, like it or not, Republicans, defund the government or not, you can't stop this freight train coming through. Coming October 1st, Americans will first be able to see exactly what the cost of their health care plan will be under Obamacare. There may be a few glitches in the system. It may take till October 3rd or October 5th in some places. I'm willing to concede it may take a couple weeks for some places. After all, these plans that you can look at in October, you can't even purchase till January. So I want to be very clear here. Just because you can look at them online, online and put your order in, you don't actually get the health insurance until January 1st. So there will be a few more months of confusion, no question. But once Americans actually get Obamacare, and of course, you know, some 60% of Americans get it through their employer, you know, another 20% or so get Medicare or on their parents' plans. We're really only talking about less than one-fifth of Americans who even will be affected by Obamacare, although I'll be one of them and I'm looking forward to it. Once they look at these plans, well, Ted Cruz, the Texas senator who gave a 20-hour filibuster against Obamacare, said something fascinating in his speech. A lot of it was boring. A lot of it was Dr. Seuss. But the fascinating thing he said was that once Americans try Obamacare, it'll be like a sugar addiction, he put it. It'll be, they won't be able to stop it. They're going to like it so much that we'll never be able to get out of the government. If we have to stop it now, or at least delay it for a year, because we can't let Americans try it. In effect, he's saying, look, Social Security, we Republicans opposed it. We almost stopped it, but Americans got into it, and now they like it. Medicare, we Republicans opposed it. We tried to stop it, but once the Americans got a load of Medicare, they like it. The same thing will happen for Obamacare. It's fascinating that he would actually admit that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. People get health care coverage. They'll get addicted to being alive, I think. You know, they'll get addicted like, wow, you know, I don't have to die of an easily preventable disease. I kind of like this.
Yeah.
That, Mark.
And next thing you know, we're all, I guess, a communist, socialist dictatorship. I guess. I'm not quite sure where the logic leads in that direction. But somehow, we're not even getting close to the universal care that they have in Canada or England or France, right, or Japan or New Zealand or Australia or frankly, Costa Rica, or which is a heck of a lot less industrialized than we are. So I don't know if Obamacare is a socialist dictatorship, those countries must be, I don't know what they are. There's no other word for them.
Just think of how contradictory that is. Because on one hand, he says, this is terrible for Americans. Americans are against this. We're doing the work of the people. Americans do not want this bill. Why do you have to stop it? Well, because if they get it, they'll love it. They'll never let it go. There's something inherently wrong. There's a lack of continuity somewhere between those two statements. It's terrible. They hate it. And they want us to stop it. But if they get it, they'll get addicted to it. We'll never get it out of their hands.
It's actually not in Congress.
What he's really saying is, they just don't know how good it is yet.
Right, and we can't let them know how good it is yet.
How darn good it is, and for God's sake, now we know how good it is, and we know we got to stop it.
That's like saying if you free a slave for a day, that slave will taste freedom and they'll never want to go back to slavery again. We cannot let a slave be free even for a day. Even for a day. And basically that is actually not illogical. It actually makes sense because people are afraid of Obamacare. Let's face it. Americans are very unsure about what's going to happen. There have been all kinds of scare tactics. They're going to take away your doctor. There's going to be death panels. The government is going to tell your doctor how to treat you. All these lies that, let's face it, if you're a conservative and you're watching or reading conservative media, you might just well believe it. And if you're a moderate, you may not know who to believe. I got another call on the line. I don't think it's Terry quite yet, but let's see who it is. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. Who is this?
Hi, Mark. It's Michael from New York City.
Hello, Michael from the Bronx. Good to hear from you. What's your comment on the government shutdown?
Well, I want to give my own ultimatum to these Republicans who persist on obstructioning, who persist on playing games with the government, with people's rights, with people's livelihoods, and persist on, I should say, people's playing games with people's lives.
You're going to give them an ultimatum. What can you do? Ultimatum. What can we do?
What can we do?
Yeah.
Well, this is just ideas on my part.
Sure.
And perhaps some people will want to join in and echo the same comments. Who knows what can be done, what kind of results it will produce. But they want to play hardball? Fine. We can play hardball, too. At least I can. And I say to them, you want to shut this government down? You have the nerve to want to implement cuts on food stamps as well? Let me tell you something. Ain't nobody in this nation that's going to be going hungry because of your, should I say, BS Republicans. I mean, it's bad enough we got people that are already going hungry. But if you want to play that game, then fine. Then you, Republicans, will provide the finest steak dinners and be feeding each and every person that you dare shut out on food stamps because of your hatred towards President Obama, and you want to punish each and every American that voted for him not once but twice in a landslide. You want to shut down Obamacare, then you, Republicans, will fix the all medical costs from your own pockets.
That's an idea.
For each and every person that gets sick because of your games. We have a lot of people already sick from the Republicans' policies, particularly the one Republican named Christine Powell Whitman, who lied to the people, said the air in and around Ground Zero is safe when she was.
That's true, but I don't want to get too far off the subject. So the question really is, what can we do about it? And I'm going to turn to Gar and ask him that question as well. But it seems to me...
I can get one more answer.
Okay, real quick, and then I want to get to Gar. Go ahead.
Yes, the one more answer... That's what voting is all about.
Well, that's exactly right. And what I was going to say was in 1995, the Republicans shut down the government. Actually, Gingrich might be considered a moderate compared to this crew. And the American people did get angry, and they didn't want to see the federal parks shut down. And veterans, you just wait till people in Afghanistan who are serving their lives don't get a paycheck, and you're going to see a lot of anger out there, and it'll all be directed at the Republicans. So, look, I don't want the government to shut down. I don't want the government to fail. But I got to tell you, if it does, my hope is this finally pulls the wool out of Americans' eyes and lets them recognize that one party wants to make this constitutional experiment succeed, and the other party just wants to shut it down. Let me give Garland a chance to respond. Go ahead, Garland.
Mark, let me tell you what, I've said it before, I don't think you've heard it, but let me tell you what, if I'm the president, let me tell you what I do.
You got to be president? How did you do that?
I'm the president.
You must know Joe Biden or something. All right, go ahead.
Okay. What I say is this, you know, you guys want these cuts, I just started with sequester. You want sequester? You want these cuts? No problem. I'd have gone through America to the reddest of red districts. And I'd have closed, if there's a federal building, I would have sent everybody a letter, due to sequester, we've got to cut back, we're going to be, everyone will be laid off as long as the sequester is on. If there was a military base, I'd have said, sorry, we're going to have to actually close this military base, we're moving these people to New York, Maryland, Delaware, whatever the blue states are. I would lay waste to the rest of red districts.
Wow.
When it comes to federal money, when it comes to highway money, I would go to my guys and girls who run the various agencies and say, I want you to take that sequester money. And I want I'd sit down with a map and I would send letters. And if you want cuts, then you're going to get them. And watch the Republicans cry, but I would start in the red districts and lay waste anything, any federal dollars. You don't want it, you're not going to get it.
Wow, that's an interesting proposal, Garland.
Shutdown. Here's what I do. A week before they said government shutdown, any federal money that was left, I'd say, look, there may be a shutdown. We got to start cutting back. Any federal money, you name it, any federal workers, you name it, they're laid off in the reddest of red districts. And I said, if you don't want federal money, you don't have to get it. If you've got any questions, contact your House member, Schmuckenberg or whoever it is.
You know, people
see how it works.
People forget that the red states take a lot more in government subsidies than the blue states. The red states are poorer than the blue states. They're less educated people than the blue states. On average, and of course, there's rich and poor in all the states. But on average, the blue states, states like New York and New Jersey, get about 67 cents back for every dollar they give the government. And the poorest states in the South, Mississippi, Alabama, they get back $2 for every dollar they give the federal government. So the red states are subsidized by the blue states. So, Garland, really all you're suggesting is to end that subsidy,
precisely. If you don't want federal money, then you don't have to get it. And here's the other part of it. If your policies work so well in the states where you run everything, then why are they all poor?
Yeah.
Where the Democrats run everything are so wealthy. Your policies, you enact your policies, it's going to make life so much better. Why do you have the fewest people? Now, the other part of the ACA is this. The ACA is a major, major stimulus package to various states. What you're going to see, the other thing you're going to see is this. The states that take it are going to get billions pumped into them. Right next door, some red state that doesn't get any money from this, they're going to be getting nothing. So you know what I say? I hate to be like this. If you guys don't want it, don't take it. You don't want the stimulus? Fine. Let's double it up to the other states. I think it's time that we made the red states accountable, and if they want to say they don't want federal dollars, they need to learn what it feels like not to have them.
Wow. Michael from the Bronx, what's your view on Garland's proposal?
Colin is right on target there. I just want to add to also an interesting observation and my prediction of this whole matter. First off, as we've all been saying, it's going to affect the election polls. And as far as I see, the Republicans are pretty much done for, especially in the House. And given the fact is, and I want everyone to please keep in their memory banks what I'm pointing out here, that the stuff that the Republicans have done, the obstructionism and even counting over 40 times attempt to repeal Obamacare, officially known as the Affordable Care Act, what have they not been doing is complying with the will of the people and working for the American people. So thus, I think, as we have seen poll after poll, the people want a Congress in which President Obama can work with, and the Republicans have just defied and betrayed the trust of the American people. What is that question here as far as this government shutdown is how much of a glutton for punishment is this Republican Party? Because, you know, the thing is that you keep making the people more and more angry, that will be a lot longer and longer and longer before any Republican is entrusted into any political office or congressional chair again.
Well, we'll see.
A lot of people are waking up to the fact of what kind of a party we have. This is not the same Republican Party as back in the day that was willing to negotiate.
Yeah, it's not even the same as Ronald Reagan's Republican Party. Thank you for your call, Michael. I always appreciate when you call in and your strong views. Garland, let me ask you.
It's not even a party. It's a collection of warring factions, and now they are really warring. There's something else that's important, too, and this is the reason I think that one of the reasons that they want to stop health care coverage so bad. Because right now it's theoretical. Nobody has the coverage yet. So they're saying we've got to stop it before it happens. What happens October 1st, November, when they start saying the numbers? We've got 800,000 people signed up. We've got 900,000 people. What happens January 1st when all of these people get cards in the mail, millions of people that say, you have now have health care coverage? Now what the entire change, because now what the Republicans are literally saying is we're fighting to take health care coverage from people who already have it.
Right.
They are screwed once people get it, because now they're fighting to take it. Now they're saying literally there are people who have cards that will get them to the doctors, and we want to make sure they can't go.
You know, I think it's the same thing when it came to,
and they're doomed.
To gay civil rights. When the first, long before Massachusetts became the first state to allow gay people to marry, in 2004, there was a huge effort by the Bush administration to stop it in all these states, to prevent it from happening, and the idea was it would destroy marriage, and I don't know what would happen. I guess hundreds of millions of Americans, all the straight Americans in the world would get divorced, because they didn't want to be part of any institution that gay people were part of. I don't know what the horrors were.
They'd be forced to divorce their wives or husbands and then marry somebody
of the same,
forced into gay marriage, even though they didn't want it.
Exactly. Well, I don't know what people feared, but once it happened, and once it became, well, are you going to take these rights away from people? You know, they did that in California, and of course there was a huge, huge uproar. And now I think people are like, okay, I guess it's no big deal, and people are already moving on with their lives. I think that it'll be a few months, but I think that 1 year from today, mark my words, this battle will be fought and over, and Republicans, by the time of the elections in 2014, will just look silly for trying to prevent this from happening. Who do we have on the phone?
We got a caller?
It's me, Mark. I was trying to squeeze in one more thing.
Okay, Michael, go ahead.
I was trying to call, and these are my words, why I see as today's Republicans. And I'm putting it in alphabetical order, criminals, sinister and treasonous, and we as a people should not tolerate any of them in public office. If they don't like it, too bad. I'm Michael S.W. from New York City, and I approve this message.
Okay, Michael. Fair enough.
Hey, he left out charlatans. I think we got to throw that in.
There's a lot of C's in there, and Ted Cruz is also a C, so there's lots of...
You know, Mark, the funny thing about Ted Cruz, over the last year, a lot of people have been predicting that, you know, the rise of Latino political power would be the death of the Republican Party. Who thought it would be like this? Who thought it would be Ted Cruz? I mean, we thought it would be the voters, but who thought they'd get some schmuck like Ted Cruz who would kill him from the inside out?
Well, I mean, what's fascinating about all of this battle is that there are sane heads in the Republican Party, people I strongly disagree with, but people like John McCain or, frankly, even the Speaker of the House, Speaker Boehner, know this is an idiotic thing to do. And the thing I find most fascinating will be the spin battle come October 1st, because I think the government is shutting down. I think it's going to shut down on Tuesday. And next comes the spin. And I'm old enough to remember 1995 when Gingrich shut down the government, and there was this huge spin, and every Republican would come on Meet the Press, and they'd say, it's Bill Clinton's fault the government was shut down. And, of course, all the Democrats said, we don't want to shut down the government. You're the people who want to shut down the government. And for a long time, Republicans insisted they were winning the PR battle, the public relations battle. And today, everyone knows, well, they didn't. Polls showed consistently that everyone blamed the Republicans. And polls show today that, again, people will begin Republicans. But I am just ready for my head to spin with all the spin, because Republicans, I think they're going to try to spin it for several days until they finally back down. And I think Speaker Boehner knows this, knows they're going to lose, can't do anything about it. And he's basically saying, look, I tried, but look what happened, guys. I told you this would happen. Now let's pass the continuing resolution. So I say the shutdown of the government ends, let's say it starts on Tuesday. I say it. We get inclinations of its ending by Friday. What do you think? Am I too optimistic?
Well, I really have no idea. You know, this is uncharted territory in that we haven't had nut cases like this before. And
well, Gingrich was pretty nutsy in 1995. Yeah.
But I don't think they were like. I don't think that was that 104th Congress or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think we've seen this since 1860. Really.
So you think that they may just stay? I mean, because the big question really is not the government shutdown. We've dealt with a few of those before. It's not pleasant, but people survive. The real question is going to come October 17th, which is, you know, 2.5 weeks from today, when we may default on the national debt, which has never happened in American history. Didn't happen during the Revolutionary War, Civil War. At no time has America ever defaulted. The last time we came close to default, it cost the American taxpayer billions of dollars. The estimates are about $20 billion was the cost to the American taxpayer just by coming close to the edge of default. And now, if they're not going to keep the government open, why won't they just default on the national debt?
That's true. And see, the thing about it is, you know, the authoritarians, by their very nature, they don't care about money. They don't care about what it costs. They only care about one thing, getting their way. They will sacrifice everything. We can all be lying on the ground. We could be, you know, the American people could be suffering to the point where we're stumbling around like, you know, the walking dead, zombies eating each other. They don't care. As long as they're in charge of the zombie, they don't care if there's a zombie apocalypse as long as they're in charge of the zombie apocalypse.
But here's the thing, Boehner does care. I mean, I do not think Boehner is part of this idiocy. I think he is the tail following the dog of the idiocy, but I think he knows better. He just can't stop it. It's like, I don't know, being in a house full of crazy people armed with guns. You do what they say. You don't like it. You don't agree with them, but you don't have much of a choice in the matter.
They're going to fill you full of holes. Well, keep in mind, when I say the authoritarians, I'm not talking about Boehner. You know, it's funny. We talk about the shutdown as though the dynamics are between the Republicans and Democrats. I think the Republicans, the dynamics are between the authoritarian wing of the Republican Party and the mainstream, because the Democrats want to keep it open. The mainstream wing wants to keep it open. There's only one group here that doesn't. So the dynamics are that we need to discuss and look at are the dynamics within the Republican Party that are closing the government down.
Well, and that'll be the question. And that'll be the question is to see what happens and how much it costs. We're going to take a break while you ponder that question. If you want to call in as well, it's 202-889-9797. Coming up, when we come back, Terry DeKester will join us and tell us why he supports earmarks. There's Terry always going out there on a limb, supporting things that very few Americans support, but that's why we love him. We'll be right back with more of the Raucous Caucus right after this. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine, and on the line I've got...
Terry, I mean Mark, I mean somebody.
Welcome back. Where you been? You've been daydreaming, I guess.
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, welcome back to the show. I'll tell you, if you will talk a little bit about Ted Cruz's filibuster, I've been pulling up online, and I want to find for you the wonderful quote where he says, watch out, people are going to like Obamacare. So take it away. You can talk about green eggs and ham, whatever you want. Give me 5 minutes to find this wonderful quote. Go ahead, Gong.
Certainly. First of all, Ted Cruz's filibuster. It was a fake filibuster. It was what he basically did was he struck a deal with Harry Reid. The House Republicans passed a budget that defunded Obamacare, which would have been it would have been dead on arrival because Harry Reid and the Democrats would kill it in the Senate. They would vote on it. It was killed. But they passed the exact budget that Ted Cruz wanted. When it came over, Ted Cruz decided that he was going to pretend as though he was filibustering it. He was going to make it look like a filibuster. So he struck a deal with Harry Reid, and he said, I will stand up here and pretend to filibuster until noon tomorrow, and then I'll go on and about my way and do something else. And Harry Reid said, all right, you know, do what you got to do, because Harry Reid's smart enough to know that that is extremely destructive for the party. So Ted Cruz stands up, pretends to filibuster until the next day, and then walks away with his chest out and say, look, I filibustered Obamacare, when in reality, all he did was pretended to filibuster the exact bill that he asked for. It was grandstanding in the worst kind of way.
Okay.
Now, who did it anger?
It didn't anger the Democrats.
Well, let me just finish off saying this. It didn't anger the Democrats because he made his party look like a bunch of schmucks and he continued to divide the party. It really angered the Republicans because they knew it was exceptionally destructive to the party because it would build his base and his ground root, grassroots support, which would allow him to continue to rip the guts out of the Republican Party. And by the way, Mark, before we move forward, I'd just like to thank Ted Cruz for that.
Yeah, well, Ted Cruz may well be running for governor of Texas. Actually, he may well be running for president in 2016. He has no chance of success. He can raise a lot of money, raise a lot of profile, and he can definitely increase the amount he can give on speeches. And yet, you would think that this conversation between two rock-red conservatives, Ted Cruz and Sean Hannity, might just make people wonder about Ted Cruz and his motivations. I love this clip. Listen in.
If we don't do it now, in all likelihood, Obamacare will never, ever be repealed. Why is that? Because on January 1st, the exchanges kick in, the subsidies kick in, and the Obama administration has, by the way, eliminated the eligibility requirements. There's no checking on it, which means it's basically setting up liar loans. Their plan is to get the American people addicted to the sugar, addicted to the subsidies, and once that happens, in all likelihood,
it's over.
It never gets repealed. So we either do it now, or we surrender entirely. But the second point, which is so frustrating, but right now, in all candor, we do not have the votes to do this. We don't have the votes in the Senate. We don't have the votes in the House. And to be honest, we're not close right now.
I heard there were, 15 senators. There was a report yesterday that Mitch McConnell was urging people not to sign on to that. Is that true?
Well, I'll let the leader explain his own views.
So this is the most honest we've ever seen Ted Cruz, and he thinks, I guess, no one's listening except conservatives because he's talking to Sean Hannity. He admits he doesn't have the votes. He admits that the American people in their democratic wisdom have elected representatives that have passed this bill, and that he doesn't have the votes to stop it. And he's admitted even more that when it goes into effect, they're going to love it so much they'll never repeal it. This is the most fascinating admission. I don't know why this isn't played. This was an obscure video. It took me a while to find this thing. Why this is not on the top of every news network? Ted Cruz admits that the Americans are going to love Obamacare so much, if he doesn't stop it now, he never will.
Right. And it contradicts his other argument that says we're doing the work of the American people. In fact, it is elitism in the highest form. It's saying this thing passed the constitutional process to be enacted. And if the American people get it, they're going to love it. But we know what's good for them. They don't know. It's a minority rule, and it's an ultimate kind of elitism. We know what's good for Americans. If they get it, they're going to like it. But it's not really good for them. But they don't have enough sense to know that.
Well, yeah,
I mean, this.
The other thing that's so fascinating is that a lot of people joked about the fact that Ted Cruz went on the Senate floor and in his faux filibuster, he spent a lot of time talking about green eggs and ham. Here's a little bit of that.
I would not, could not, in a car. You may like them. You will see. You may like them in a tree. I would not, could not, in a tree, not in a car, you let me be.
Okay, so he's reading from Green Eggs and Ham. Here's what I found so fascinating. I guess he read it because he had nothing else to do and he simply had to spend 21 hours. But there actually is a moral to the Green Eggs and Ham tale. Green Eggs and Ham is all about someone. I mean, the fact that Cruz missed the irony of his own reading. It's all about someone who's never tried green eggs and ham and says, I will not like it. I will not like them. I will not eat them in a tree. I will not eat them. You let me be, blah, blah, blah. No green eggs and ham for me. And the person says, just try it. Just try it. Just try it. Take a little taste. Maybe you'll like it. Of course, the book says, he tried it. He loved it, and he's at the end of the book is has him screaming, I'll eat them anywhere. I love green eggs and ham. That's exactly what Cruz is doing with Obamacare. And he missed the irony of his own statement. It's amazing.
What I like about Ted Cruz as a Democrat, as a left-leaning person, is that, and this is, to me, this is the mark of an extremist. An extremist always attacks the person closest to him ideologically. If you look on the left, if you want to see an extremist, look at somebody who always attacks the Democrat, who never has anything to say bad about the Republicans. They pretend like they don't exist. When you look at, because there's a time, you know, Mark, you and I at times will get angry at the Democrats, angry at President Obama's policies, and we'll argue against we even had an intervention for President Obama trying to push him in the right direction.
We certainly did.
Some issues. But we spend more time worrying about the other side. Ted Cruz spends his time saying, "Oh, these mainstream Republicans are they're house trained. They have no spine. I'm the one who's standing up for you." But ultimately, I think that what we're looking at is we're looking at what had to happen. We're looking at the Frankenstein theory. If you create a monster, sooner or later, it's going to come back and heave you out the window, you know, in some kind of a fire inferno when people march with pitchforks. And what happened is the Republican Party spent so much time, they spent many years empowering via Rush Limbaugh and some of the Mark and Savage and these other guys, empowering the authoritarian wing, who are the social conservatives of their party, feeling that once they empowered these people, that they could control them and continue to do whatever they wanted to do. You cannot control authoritarians. By their very nature, the authoritarian says, I have to be my... Authoritarians do not want to govern. They want to rule. Authoritarianism, by its very nature, is not compatible with democracy. So once, if you look at Ted Cruz, what are they really doing? They want to do an end around the Constitution. The Constitution has a very clear process for A, passing the law at the ACA, and for B, taking it to the Supreme Court for judicial review to see if it passes constitutional muster. Now, what happened? It passed through, it was signed by the president, it went to the Supreme Court, they said it's constitutional. It's over in a democracy. You have to throw your hands up and say, I lost this battle. The Republicans, at the end of the constitutional process, said, we're not willing to accept the constitutional process. We're going to find another way to stop a law that was constitutionally enacted and put in place. What they're doing, they're defunding, is an end around the Constitution. And if you let them do that, what next? Do they say, we don't like the EPA, we're not going to fund that?
Well, I think that's exactly what they do. That's what they tried to do with the National Labor Relations Board. That's what they tried to do with the Consumer Protections Board. They basically said, we're not going to let you appoint anyone to alcohol, tobacco, and firearms because we want every crazy person to own a gun. I believe this is Terry DeKester joining us. Is that correct?
It is indeed. It is.
Holy great mother of all things, great and swell.
Well, what?
You excited Garland, well, clearly.
Apparently so.
Garland missed you a lot. Me, I'm like, hey, Terry, how are you? But Garland apparently really, really missed you. So
I miss Garland, believe me, and you, Mark. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Terry. I missed you, too. We were just talking about the wonderful hypocrisy of Ted Cruz, which is an easy way to spend several hours on radio. But I know you wanted to change the subject and tell us why you support earmarks. Is that right?
Yeah, well, but, I mean, I'll give you one thing, too. I mean, it's a term that, you know, I've come up with, and I'm sure it'll fit. I mean, we now have, instead of filibusters, we have fibbalusters. And that's Mr. Cruz's, you know, forte is fibbalusters. But anyway, we got to get earmarks back, guys.
Really? Why do we want earmarks?
Well, I didn't even realize this, too, but, you know, with the earmarks, it's the only thing that gave the leadership any power over their fellow members.
Interesting.
Oh.
Interesting, because we were just talking about the fact that Boehner can't control his raucous caucus. Sorry.
Right.
So
That's the reason. There's two things about it that are really important. One is, you know, you no longer have that leverage of saying, well, you know, if you want the bridge in, you know, your little district in Kansas, then you're going to shut up and you know, let us get this bill passed.
You know, it's interesting because you and Garland...
You can threaten to defund their districts.
Exactly. You and Garland are actually kind of on the same page there, Terry. You're talking about earmarks so that congressional leaders can punish the wayward members. And Garland was talking about the president actually punishing the wayward members by taking money out of their districts. So you have a consistency there, which is rare for us.
Except the other catch is, without having earmarks now, we have what's called letter marks. I don't know if you've heard of those. And what they do now is the congressman, instead of going for an earmark, which he has to get, you know, permission and get it attached to some bill and all that, is they send letters directly to the heads of the agencies for whatever service they want. And they're getting thousands of letters, and all of these are, you know, secret. I mean, there's no transparency whatsoever. You can't even get them with Freedom of Information Acts. And they're literally getting their funding for their little pet projects that way, but again, circumventing the leadership entirely.
If I'm in charge, if I'm the president, and it's a red district, the answer is no. You do not want federal funds. And you know what? Every answer, I instruct the heads of all my agencies, we're going to come up with a form letter that says, due to the sequester, there are massive cuts, no. We're not giving you anything. Forget it. Don't send any more letters until after the sequester is over.
See, Garland, it's a fun idea, and there's a certain visceral thrill to it, and I have to admit, I kind of warmed to it when you said it. But now when I think about it, and I hate to be the practicality here, but won't then, once a Republican becomes president, won't they just defund all the Democratic districts, and we really will end up with warring states?
Well, I don't know if you've realized who you're dealing with now, Mark. If these people get in power, they'll do a whole lot worse than that. Well, first of all, they can't win presidency anymore. They may try to steal it. If they get in power, that's nothing. You know, how many times have we said we won't do this because it's too harsh, because if the Republicans get in power, they'll do it. When they get in power, they know their boundaries. They'll do 100 million times worse. The game has changed.
But, and the flaw in your plan, though, I mean, if you keep the...
There's a flaw in the plan?
Yes, there's a flaw.
And a fly in your soup.
And a fly in your soup. And the, you know. But the flaw is if you have, you know, if an agency can actually refuse to give a fund to something or fund something on the president's whim, which I'm not sure legally he could do, but even if he did that, you're weakening the agency. And so the response of Congress will, of course, begin to more defunding of that particular agency, like they're trying to do with the EPA, like they're trying to do with, they are doing with Obamacare. They will just weaken the agencies further.
Well, Terry, how do earmarks fix the problem?
that gives the leadership, and Boehner is caught and has been caught for a long time. I'm not saying he's a good guy or a bad guy, but he obviously is caught in a Congress that he has no control over whatsoever.
He's hapless, is how I would put it.
Yeah. And the reason is because he has...
Whenever you use the word hapless, Mark, it must always be followed by bungler. So you have to
That's true. Or Charlie Brown. There's a certain Charlie Brown-esque quality to him.
But he has no leverage. He has no leverage whatsoever. And therefore, they do whatever they want. And since they are simply ideologically driven, they don't give a damn about politics or policy or reality or practicality. They're just ideology driven. And that's why, that's one of the main reasons the whole thing is out of control. It's a totally unintended consequence, but it is drastic. And somehow that we have to restore that leverage.
Now, do you think that this might cause the voters? Because remember, there are ideological voters who are digging in and electing these ideological representatives. They are representing their district. Their district might have a minority, does certainly have a minority view in America, but it's probably the majority of the people in Rock Red, Texas, or wherever they represent. Do you think that some of those people, being the ornery types they are, might just take it as, well, a war on them? I don't care whether Obama does it or Boehner does it. Instead of saying, we have to change our ways, we'll respond by saying, screw you, federal government. We don't want your aid. You know, we're going to have our guns and seek secession and who knows what. But basically not give in just because, well, they get even more angry. What do you think?
They're already, this is already political secession. When you say that I'm not going to go by the Constitution when the laws are constitutionally passed, we're not going to fund them. I think this is a form of political secession already.
Well, if you mean secession, and if we're talking about Texas seceding, I mean, we've really got to encourage that. We've just got to make that.
Save Austin first. Let Texas go down, but save Austin. It reminds me of the Bible, right? If there's 10 good people in Sodom and Gomorrah, don't turn the tide. Save Austin. Destroy Texas.
But you got to remember, Austin is the capital, and that's where, you know, what's his name, Perry is, you know. So if you save that, you're saving Perry, and then we're really in trouble.
Oh, poor Austin.
You got to let Austin go.
Oh, no, poor Austin. They're such nice people.
We got to airlift, you know, kind of like Saigon, you know. We got to airlift the residents out.
Yeah. Airlift the people from Austin to San Francisco and let Texas go down into the wilderness. You know, it's interesting because all of this president, Barack Obama, was a unknown state senator from Illinois, and virtually no one had heard of him, even in Illinois, when he appears on the stage in 2004 at the nomination of John Kerry and says that we are not a collection of red states and blue states. There are little league players in the blue states. There are gay families in the red states. We are the United States. And people love that speech. I love that speech. I remember the day after that speech, I'd never heard of Barack Obama. I said, wow, this guy is good, precisely because he gives the kind of rhetoric that brings us all together. The sheer irony that this guy who came to fame in America talking about bringing us together is presiding over what may be the biggest blue state, red state wars since, well, the Civil War.
And partial reason, unfortunately, is, you know, I hate to say it, but because he's black.
Well, I wonder about that. I clearly there's a bunch of racists that hate him because he's black. No question about it. But, you know, I remember how hard they fought against Bill Clinton. I mean, they accused Bill Clinton of killing a man. You know, Vince Foster, they spent hundreds of millions of dollars going into his private life. Luckily for President Obama, you know, he doesn't have any issues there. But, you know, I just think they play for keeps. I mean, I'm not saying there's not racism. Of course there is. I think, though, they would do it with any Democratic president. I don't know, Garland, what do you think?
No, don't forget, Mark, people in the black community very, very strongly believe that one of the principal reasons they hated Bill Clinton was because he was kind of a level playing field guy.
That's true.
You know, don't forget, a significant number of black people came into the middle class, more so than, like, all in the history of the United States under Bill Clinton.
That's
more
true.
Than that came into the middle class.
That's
he
true.
Was about for everyone, and I think... It's not just about black and white. It's about people who believe in a hierarchical society. And Barack Obama represents a society where, whether it's race or class or whatever the case, people are not pigeonholed into one station in life. They can move up or down the chain. And that's the two things that you've got people who want America to be divided by race and divided by class and he represents the hierarchical society.
And that actually brings us back full circle to Obamacare, because one of the great things that the Affordable Care Act will do come January 1st, 2014, is it will help end, it'll help, I mean, we have the largest inequality in America since the 1920s. We are the most unequal state in terms of wealth of any industrialized nation in the world. The only nations that are more unequal than us are third world nations in places like Russia and China.
We're a third world nation. Let's not exclude us. We're becoming a third
world. Well, we're getting there. We're not quite there yet.
We're working on it.
But my point is that one of the things that healthcare does is it helps erase those distinctions. If you are sick and you know you can be taken care of, even if you can't afford to pay for it, that means that you have an opportunity to live the American dream, to succeed, and basically achieve something in life and not have to worry every day that you may die. And so that kind
of...
Go ahead.
Not only that, Mark, you don't have to be a slave for a corporation.
That's true.
A lot of people work for corporations because they can't get a health care coverage any other way.
That's true.
What you can do now is you can start your own business. You can go out there and work for yourself and still have health care coverage. It opens. I've read there's a story going out now that says there's going to be probably 30% more new businesses started because people will not be forced to work corporations and slaves because it's the only way they can get health care coverage.
And I'll tell you something else, which is good news, guys. I was in a conference recently, and one of the people in the conference, it wasn't related to health care, but it turns out he was a board chairman on one of the major hospitals in Portland, Oregon. And he was telling us with, you know, just complete calm, despite everything you hear in the news and all this thing about prices and not prices, the hospitals are basically going right ahead instituting and preparing for Obamacare. They're perfectly happy with it. They've adapted as needed. They think it's going to be a plus, and they have no real worries or fears about instituting it whatsoever.
Well, that's true. I mean, and the other thing is that the blue states are prepared as well. I mean, they're the ones.
The hospitals are going to have to figure out what they're going to do with all that money. I mean, people will be coming in, and they're actually being paid for people in the emergency room. What are they going to do with all that extra cash?
Well, one thing they're going to have to do is they have to cut down their prices, because one of the things that Obamacare does is it makes sure you can't get more than a 25% profit, which I think is pretty extreme as it is. Medicare, by the way, for those that don't know, has administrative costs of 3%. For all the checks and all the things that they do to make sure your Medicare benefits are paid, all those federal workers who Republicans hate so much, they get 3% off the top. 97% goes to beneficiaries. In healthcare, lots of people make more than 25%. You got to pay those CEO salaries, by the way. And so what one of the things that it's happening, it's already happening, because my uncle got a check. His health care plan apparently took more than 25% profit, and he got a nice little check in the mail this year under Obamacare, because they're not going to take those profits from him anymore.
And even with that 25%, though, you should realize, because pharmaceuticals make about 25% profit, pharmaceuticals and some healthcare industries are the only industries, I'm telling you the truth, the only industries that make 25% profit.
Yeah.
Nobody else makes that. ExxonMobil doesn't make that.
I guarantee. No, retailers certainly don't, because they have competition. They have
not only that,
right.
But it's a much fairer market. I mean, your average supermarket makes between 1% and 2% profit.
That's exactly right.
To give you an idea of how extreme even 25% is, it's a sort of a crime that we have to even have that as part of the legislation. They still get 25% profit when nobody else is going to get it. But at least it's a little bit of a cap.
Well, that's true. And for those that are trying to get 35, 40, 45%. And the other thing about Obamacare, and we got to wrap this up very soon, but that it, look, that can change. We can later lower that to 20% and 15%. This is the foot in the door. Social Security has changed. Medicare has changed. A lot of these programs we've grown to love didn't act. I mean, Social Security originally didn't include agricultural workers. So these things change over time. They get better over time. I expect there'll be fits and starts. I think there'll be computers down on October 1st. I think a lot of people will try to find it. Everyone will flood the websites. It will go down. But I do think come a year from today, November 2014, when it's time to elect new members of Congress, Obamacare will be seen, like Ted Cruz said, as a fact of life. It ain't going to be repealed. And I think hopefully people will blame the Republicans for shutting down the government this Tuesday.
And when Carl,
and last but not least, it destroys the argument and the premise that A, the government does not have a part in the moral workings of society, and B, the government can't do anything right, and you don't want them in your life in any way, shape, or form. It destroys that argument and opens the way for a broader safety net.
Maybe, though I think Social Security already destroyed that argument. Go ahead, Terry.
And when you have Karl Rove writing in the Wall Street Journal that the wise up Republicans, you're not going to get rid of Obamacare. I mean, these guys are just playing a game that's just, it's showbiz, it's insanity, it's ideology. It has nothing to do with what's happening, really.
It's true. And amongst themselves, Ted Cruz and Sean Hannity admit that it's all fake. Hey, Terry, if people want to find you under your rock, where would they go?
Under my rock, it is still, what the heck is it, drofdemocracy@AOL.com.
drofdemocracy@AOL.com. Garland, where can they find you?
GarlandIn@gmail.com or at Garland and Nixon on Twitter or Garland Nixon on Facebook.
And I am MarkLevineTalk.com, at MarkLevineTalk on Twitter. I'm all over Facebook, Facebook.com/MarkLevineTalk. And you can also find me in about 40 minutes on Fox News. I'm going to appear and defend the city of Detroit defend bringing that city back to life. You can watch that just 40 minutes from now as I head out of the radio studio. Thank you so much, Garland and Terry, for coming here on the Raucous Caucus. Join us next week at noon for another raucous edition of our caucus. This is Mark, Terry, and Garland signing off.
Thank you, Mark.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine. We're going to have an interesting program for you today. I'm actually going to be in two places at once, which is hard to do. Coming up in 38 minutes, turn on your TVs and you can watch me on Fox News defending the fact that the government is not letting the city of Detroit die, nor should they. And I hope you'll tune in for that. If you're driving, don't worry. You can still listen to We Act Radio because I'm going to be, like I said, in two places at once. One of the things that I wanted to do, now that Obamacare is finally coming into fruition, it's going to start January 1st, 2014, and we're going to have the exchanges list their prices starting this Tuesday, October 1st. I want to explain how it works. I want to explain why it's better than the current healthcare system. And you know what? I don't have to do it in the next 2 hours because I've done it before. I did a show a year ago right here at We Act Radio, AM 1480, explaining how Obamacare works and why it's a good deal for the American people. So while I cart off to Fox Studios in Washington, D.C., I want to play for you a prior show where I explained it all in detail. Hope you enjoy it. If you have any comments, go to my website, MarkLevineTalk.com. Leave them there. Follow me on Twitter at MarkLevineTalk. Or just go to Facebook and say hello to me there, Facebook.com/MarkLevineTalk. I always welcome your comments. Here I am a year ago explaining Obamacare.